Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose. You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey.
Coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Can't play it, talk a number to call 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4CBS. Mikey B, Connor Green across the way, AB with your update. Sitting in this morning is Andrew as well, as Taz has this Wednesday morning off. He'll be back with us tomorrow morning as we have a double dip of Taz and the Moose, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern time, and then we're back 8 p.m. to midnight for the Taz and the Moose NFL Draft Special. And Mikey B just can't wait till Thursday gets here. You just can't wait. I mean, the smile in the ear to ear, the nervous anticipation. He's been looking forward to April 26th, has had it circled on his calendar for months. One of the great nights in the life of Mike Bisceglia, correct?
Yes, true. I actually bought a second calendar just so I could circle it again.
There you go. Let's talk a little Giants football right now. Pat Leonard does a great job covering Big Blue for the New York Daily News, the number two overall selection in tomorrow night's first round of the NFL draft. Hey, Pat. Andrew and Mark with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning, bud.
Gentlemen, yeah, I'm waiting for it to be draft day. I keep waking up thinking it's going to be Thursday. Not here yet. Almost there.
Almost there. Almost 24 hours away. Less than that till finally draft day is upon us here, Pat. Mindset, what do you read into everything that you've heard from the Giants general manager leading into tomorrow night?
Oh, geez. Well, just going off the general manager, which I think is important, an important place to start, too, is that, you know, this is an old football lifer who has been scouting football his whole life. He's going to trust his scout. And when he says that he's going to take the best player available and a guy that needs to be a future Hall of Famer at number two, I believe him. And that's the strongest reason, or one of the stronger reasons, why everyone thinks they're going away from quarterback. Because even though this is a strong, or, you know, kind of a lot of flavors of different quarterbacks in a deep class, there's no consensus great quarterback in this group, but there are a couple great consensus prospects in Saquon Barkley, Bradley Chubb, and even Quentin Nelson, offensive lineman from Notre Dame. So everything the Giants have done and that Gettleman has done so far has been geared towards helping Eli Manning win again now. It doesn't mean they're definitely not going QB, but it certainly seems to point in that direction.
And Pat, you know, the kind of the catch that Gettleman ends up in, because to me, I would pick Chubb or Nelson or Barkley in a vacuum before any of the quarterbacks, but you have to take a quarterback when you need one, and hopefully for the Giants, they're never in this position again. But if he ends up not taking a quarterback here, to explain it, he's almost got to tell us why those three or four guys weren't good enough to be selected, but that's a hard thing to do too, because he can't go to a microphone and tell me how bad Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold is, and that's why he took Quentin Nelson instead.
I'm glad you brought this up, Andrew, because there was a point I wanted to make to you guys off of practice yesterday, because the Giants have one of the extra voluntary mini camps that you get when you have a first-year head coach. And listen, you don't base anything off of one practice. It was a little windy. Eli Manning and Davis Webb, neither of them threw the ball well yesterday, and I know it's only a practice. You don't base a draft on a practice. But to me, and forget Webb for a second, Manning was throwing some ducks. He overthrew Evan Engram. He overthrew Sterling Shepard. Shepard made him look good by leaping about 40 feet in the air to catch one pass. But to me, it was a reminder of what you saw a lot from Eli last season and even in parts of 2016. Like, to me, and everybody was out there on the field in East Rutherford too. You know, John Mara standing there, Gettleman standing there, Kevin Abrams. Everyone's out there watching this. And if you have two eyes and you've been watching Eli over the last year and a half, even if Webb grows into something better than anyone thought he could be last year, you make the point, Andrew, you still need a quarterback sooner rather than later. And in my opinion, much sooner than the Giants think they need one.
What's their feeling on Webb?
Their feeling on Webb is that they're trying to give him a chance. He's learning a new offense. Of course, he'd been, you know, cramming the McAdoo's offense. Now he's cramming this one. He does work hard on that, and he's impressed them off the field. But Moose, to me, it's kind of, you know, talking to Shermer a lot this offseason, they wish that they had some sort of game tape, even if it were one series in the fourth quarter of a game last year, just to see what he looks like on an NFL field at game speed. And not that that would deter them from taking a quarterback one way or the other, but they just feel like they need more information on him. And to my point, even though, like, to me, that's a reminder they need a quarterback watching this, this three-day minicamp, Pat Shermer's pretty much said, isn't going to sway them one way or another. But, I mean, I'll say this. He's not, you know, he's not Lamar Jackson running around. But Webb does show a little bit of mobility. You know, if you think about how Nick Foles isn't going to scramble for 30 yards a play, but can, you know, make a guy miss and make a play, I think that's what they like to see in what Webb could bring as far as pocket mobility. And he's so far made some good throws, but he was kind of up and down yesterday for sure. So we'll see how he does today.
Pat Leonard with us here on Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. Pat, the odds of the Giants actually using the second pick tomorrow night or what?
Yeah, you know, early this week I thought it was there was a strong chance that they might trade out. And, you know, if you ask me right now what they do, my order of what they would do at first was going Barkley and then trade out and then quarterback. The trade out seems less and less likely, and here's why. Gettleman has been taking calls on this and seriously considering it and trying to play the field, but it sounds like the Giants are trying to, you know, they want a King's ransom to move back. They also don't want to move back as far as 12 where the Bills are, and the Bills want to come up. It almost seems like teams like the Broncos at 5 are becoming more the flashpoint and kind of playing out their leverage a little bit better, or maybe that's just how the draft is playing out. But I think, you know, the Giants are such a mystery right now, and even though the Jets are going quarterback, teams know that the Browns won't go QB at 4. So if the Giants don't take a quarterback at 2, then that's only 2 QBs coming off the board in the top 4 picks. So to answer your question, I think there's a strong chance they end up staying because they're not getting the return that the Giants are looking for to bring a team up there, and they also don't want to move back too far where they're out of position of the premier players.
You know, Pat, we'll certainly get into Saquon Barkley here, but the quarterbacks are really the sexy topic of conversation, right? And everyone gets into who falls where on which board. If I were asking you, Pat, to speculate, who the top quarterback of the 5, who the number one quarterback on the Giants board is, who is it?
I think it's Sam Darnold. I think it's Sam Darnold and then Josh Allen and Josh Rosen, like, you know, what, you know, 2A and 2B. You know, like, I personally think that Rosen makes a ton of sense to be the guy, like, to draft the quarterback and draft Josh Rosen. I mean, you know, people are talking about that the Jets could go that route instead of Mayfield at 3, for example. But Darnold and Allen are two guys who have high upside, and Darnold is more, even though he's still young, is even a little more polished than Allen. And because the Giants clearly seem to think that Eli has 2 years left at least, these are two players too who, like 20-year-old Sam Darnold, if you sit him at first and he starts to learn, you know, maybe he's ready to jump in 2019 and take the job outright in training camp. But even if he sits around and waits, you're getting who is really the consensus, you know, or as close as there is to a consensus kind of highest level or best prospect here. So I think Sam Darnold will be the guy. I'm skeptical that he'll really be there at 2. I know Allen's been rumored at 1, but to me, Allen's too much of an unsure thing for the Browns to take him at 1. But we've seen the Browns do some crazy things. So.
Yeah, you certainly have. And what about Barkley? I mean, if Saquon wearing the hoodie when he's getting at the barbershop in Pennsylvania last week. You mentioned what Gettleman has had to say. He's an exquisite talent. A lot of people believe, Pat, that he's the number one football player in this draft tomorrow night when you're lining up your draft boards. What about how enamored do you think the Giants are with Saquon Barkley?
Yeah, they love him. And you mentioned the sweatshirt. He loves them. And you know, play other players want to play in New York too, right? Like Josh Rosen would love to play in New York. But Barkley is a guy who fills a position of need now, fills a position of need that the Giants haven't had elite talent at in a long time. And, you know, comparing him to, say, Bradley Chubb, I know that Bradley Chubb could make a defense better. But to me, the defense's problem last year wasn't talent, but the offense's problem in many areas was. And I think that adding talent around Eli Manning, it would be disingenuous to commit to winning again now with Eli and saying Eli has enough left, we just need to surround more pieces around him, and then go out and use your premier pick and not take this great running back that can help him. You know, it doesn't fit the mold. He can do it all. Pat Shurmur has talked a lot about how he was respect for a well-rounded backs, and Saquon Barkley isn't just elite in his speed and his combine results and all that, but he finds the end zone and he can catch passes, and he's a pretty good pass blocker too. So they have Wayne Gallman that they like already, but Jonathan Stewart isn't going to carry the load, and Paul Perkins right now looks like he might have hurt himself in off-season workouts. They desperately need a back. So it would surprise me that they left a vacancy that great in their backfield not to take one right away.
What about the bigger argument, Pat, about just kind of position value, that a running back is never worth taking that high? I disagree, because I don't think the Cowboys regret taking Ezekiel Elliott for football reasons, and I don't think the Rams regret taking Todd Gurley. I just, you know, I'd rather, if that guy is as good as we think he is, Saquon Barkley, I'm all for taking him as high as number two.
Right, Andrew. No, you're absolutely right. The answer to that is, again, who is making this pick for the Giants? It's not a young whippersnapper GM who has, you know, uses analytics maybe as what's his one of his most clear guiding forces. This is Dave Gettleman, who uses his eyes and his football evaluation, and he doesn't care also what people think of what he's doing. You know, value is definitely a consideration. I'm not saying he's tossing the numbers aside, but I'm just saying that he is an instinctive, seasoned football man. And remember, he drafted Christian McCaffrey 8th overall for the Panthers 2 years ago. And McCaffrey's a great player, but Barkley is a much more well-rounded, much more impressive player than that. So if he can be convinced to take a running back for a team with a need at running back at 8, you know, kind of an undersized, versatile back out of Stanford, I don't see what would prevent him from taking a strong do-it-all, you know, guy with a nose for the end zone who could complement Beckham as far as being a game breaker at 2. I do not think that will stop him.
Pat, I'll ask the next question this way. If both Darnold and Barkley are sitting there with the second overall pick, say the Browns go with Josh Allen, number one overall, for argument's sake, if they're both sitting there, are they still going with Barkley?
I think that's a toss-up. That makes the draft so much more interesting as far as, you know, uncertainty and guesswork, and maybe even, you know, that could be a scenario where the Giants really don't know their decision on that yet. You know, they've obviously discussed that kind of scenario because it could happen. But it also, we were talking earlier about trading out, Darnold is so highly regarded by so many teams that I also wonder, and I think Gettleman would ratchet up the trade talks in the moment. That's how I sense he's handling this, like waiting to strike when the iron's hot. If Darnold falls to 2, but the Giants decide ultimately, even though they like him, they still want Barkley, Darnold being available there could enable them possibly to get somebody to move up to come get him, you know, to maybe create a market and convince teams that other teams are jockeying to come up and then trade out that pick. You know, I think, though, if those two guys are available, they end up taking one of them. Like I said, I'm a Rosen guy over Darnold, but it sounds like Darnold is the guy that the Giants would love. I even think, like I said earlier, that Allen is a personality fit with Shurmur and this team and with the timeline of Eli Manning alongside Darnold. But that would be a tough decision. And, you know, I'll say this. Should they go quarterback? Yes. Will they go quarterback? No, my answer right now would be that they take Barkley.
Pat, in this scenario, would the Giants hesitate to help the Jets out by making a trade with them and letting them take Darnold, who may end up being the better quarterback in the city for the next decade?
Yeah, see, that's a great question, you know, because, you know, maybe they could trade back to 4 with the Browns, or in a three-way trade, get, you know, if a team like the Bills came up to 2 and they went down to 4 and the Browns went down to 12, they would know that the Jets are taking a quarterback at 3, the Bills are taking a quarterback at 2, so they could still get Barkley at 4 if they wanted. For the Jets, you know, interestingly enough, I think we've talked about this, but Mike Maccagnan never picked up the phone to call Dave Gettleman when the Jets were investigating moving up the draft, and they moved up from 6 to 3 with the Colts. They called the Colts, they called the Browns at 1, and they didn't call the Giants, which is unusual. You know, it appears that the Jets just didn't think Gettleman would be willing to make that deal and would probably ask them for even more than the first rounder and 3 twos that they gave Indianapolis to move up. I think it's irresponsible not to make that call. So just because it's Giants and Jets, I would think Dave Gettleman would get the Jets on the phone there and see if they're willing to come up to get Darnold if that's the guy they want. You know, a lot of people say, as much as Mayfield and Rosen are guys the Jets like, that if Darnold were there, they would take him too. And so that's, yeah, you make a good point. If the further Darnold falls, the more people may get, you know, kind of itchy fingers to kind of pull the trigger on a trade to go up and get him.
It is Taz and the Moose with you here on this Wednesday morning. Mark Melusis, Andrew Bogish with you. Jubi being joined by Pat Leonard, covers the Giants for the New York Daily News, doing a fantastic job. Pat, voluntary minicamps going on. Odell Beckham Jr. is taking place and taking part in them. And, of course, Pat Shurmur saying, oh, absolutely, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be with the Giants in 2018. How does this all play out with the star receiver for Big Blue who's in search of a new contract?
That's a great question, Moose. I'll tell you this. What I got out of Tuesday and out of the last couple of weeks is that Pat Shurmur is clearly aware that he needs to make Odell Beckham Jr. a priority for a couple reasons. One is that he's injured, so he's not necessarily on the field with the team, so he wants to keep him up to speed. But the other is that, you know, some relationship mending needs to be done here. I mean, Beckham was hurt and thought he was out the door, essentially, you know, from all the reports that, you know, were coming out. You know, when I reported that the Rams and the Giants were talking, and then right before they made that Brandon Cooks trade, it really looked like Odell was going to be a part of that, but the price of the trade apparently was too high. But that left Beckham with the Giants and without the long-term contract he wants as well. So Beckham and Shurmur seem to be on the same page as far as Shermer's communicating with him. He's stressing to him his expectations. Like, it's not kid glove stuff. He's stressing to him, but he's just being direct. He's including him. The coach even said that they met one-on-one on Monday, the day before minicamp started, because he wanted to express what he was trying to accomplish at minicamp. Clearly, the coach knows who his best player is, and he's trying to keep him not only his best player, but keep him on his team. But, of course, Moose, you alluded to it. The big question here is, will and when will Dave Gettleman re-sign Odell Beckham Jr.? What amount will he take on a contract extension? Because no one believes, until Odell says it himself, that he's going to change his mind and play on this fifth-year option. So I wonder when that trade will happen, and whether, as we go into the draft, will Beckham's uncertainty about whether he gets that contract create some friction and maybe, you know, rekindle the trade market. Nobody knows that. There's no sign, but all it takes is one phone call.
Hey, Pat, we really appreciate you spending a couple minutes with us this morning. It's going to be a great next few days for everybody that covers the National Football League. Enjoy the first round tomorrow night. All right, Pat?
Thanks, Moose. Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Pat.
You got it. Pat Leonard, New York Daily News, covers the Giants. And it'll be interesting to see how Beckham does play out, but certainly what the Giants do with that number 2 overall pick. Andrew, gun to the head. Darnold Barkley sitting there with the number 2 overall pick. Eli, 37 years of age. Do you think everything we've heard from Gettleman is a smokescreen, or do you think the Giants are drafting Barkley?
It has to be a quarterback.
It has to be.
From the outside. It's got to be a quarterback. In a vacuum, Barkley's the better player. He's the better prospect. He impacts you, I don't want to say better, but he could be an all-timer.
Yeah.
I don't think Darnold's an all-timer, but if you look back at the history of the NFL, you get your quarterback more times than not at the beginning of the draft. Not in free agency, not with pick 199. When you take some scrawny kid from Michigan, you get him in the early portion of the first round. The Giants may never again in the near future be back in this spot. They're lucky indirectly to be there right now. it's got to be a quarterback.
Yeah, you know, but it's got to be a quarterback they love. And in that scenario, if Pat is correct and Darnold's their top quarterback and he happens to be sitting there with the number two overall pick, even after everything we've heard, I would agree with you. I would not be surprised if they draft a quarterback that they love in Sam Darnold, the quarterback at a USC. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Coming up at 8:40 a.m. Eastern time, Andrew and myself will be joined by Tracy Murray, longtime NFL vet, former UCLA Bruins star. But coming up straight ahead, huge Wednesday night, huge Wednesday night in the NBA. And we'll preview that next. Taz and the Moose with you, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Taz off this morning, Moose and Andrew Bogish is your combination here on this Wednesday on CBS Sports Radio. Sirius 206, XM 206, Sirius XM app 206 as well. Remember, download the podcast each and every day. iTunesRadio.com and tune in. Remember to give us a rating. 855-212-4CBS. That's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's head out to Oregon. I think he's a super fan of the Taz and the Moose show, and that is Jack. What's going on, Jack?
Hey, morning, fellas. How's it going, Moose?
What's going on, brother?
What's up, Jack?
I just wanted to pick your guys' brain. I was doing some research on Josh Allen, and his percentage when he releases the ball in under 3 seconds is significantly higher to the one on average, which correlates, you know, in college to NFL, there's a huge difference in how long they have in the pocket, correct?
Right. We had Ray Lucas on yesterday, so he said on average, college quarterbacks hold the ball for 5 to 6 seconds. On average, if the ball is not out of your hands at 3, 3.5 seconds in the National Football League, your rear end is on the turf. So to play to the point that you're making about Josh Allen is that when he gets the ball out of his hands quicker, his completion percentage was higher at Wyoming as compared to when he was trying to work his way through his progressions and holding on to the ball too long.
Yeah, I think it was like, I think Bleacher Report said it was like 74%, which is significantly higher than his standard percentage rate. And I was getting the feeling, remember Big Ben stats when he first came out? You know, the college, they were good, just like Josh Allen, but they weren't as great. He kind of got that Big Ben askew kind of, I don't know, I just get that vibe from him.
Yeah, but here's the difference, Jack. I get the Roethlisberger comparison with athleticism. I mean, Big Ben, though, raised the level of that Miami of Ohio team. I mean, they played on ESPN on Thursday Night Football when Thursday Night Football was still a thing on ESPN in the college season before the NFL engulfed it. He played in big games. Here's the question I have, and it was a point that was brought up by Charlie Castle, I believe, on the NFL Network when I was watching some of their draft coverage a couple weeks back. Josh Allen didn't dominate at Wyoming.
No, he didn't. But also, I got to say, Big Ben had a better offensive line at Ohio than Allen had at Wyoming. I mean, there's that aspect of it. I just get that. And the rest of the guys, you know, like you guys said, it's you know, everybody's tossing the coin at this moment and all the hype. I'm just so pumped up for your special tomorrow night, and just wanted to let you guys know. Well, always listening every day.
Well, Jack, you are super fan number one. And if we ever have a Taz and the Moose Hall of Fame, Jack, you will get the first gold jacket.
Yeah. Well, since day one, since you guys started, man, I was like, man, I love these guys.
There you go, Jack.
Yeah,
all right, we appreciate
day,
it, brother.
Cracking up. You guys have a great day.
You got it, Jack. Enjoy your day out in Oregon.
Send your measurements for your blazer.
That's exactly right. Yes. I don't know if we can afford to pay for the blazer.
No, just send them.
Right. Send your measurements.
So we have them.
And we'll send you a bill.
And update accordingly as you wait for your Hall of Fame.
That's exactly right.
Induction.
Right. There's no question. That's the concern I have about Allen. To play to Jack's point and the measurables, Andrew, when we were talking about the quarterback position and getting into the reach, don't reach for a quarterback at the top of the draft, here's the concern you have with Allen. All the measurables are there, and you brought up how that does play a role, and I agree with it. It does. Big quarterback, strong arm, big hand size, everything that you want. Good athlete, can escape the pocket. can move them if you want to, and move the pocket if your offensive line is struggling on a particular game. I just think you're either accurate or you're not as a thrower.
Yeah.
And that's the problem I have with Allen. Now, Jack brings up the point where if he gets the ball out of his hands after 3 seconds, the completion percentage is 74%. I'd like to know the percentage of those passes that are screens. I'd like to know the percentage of those passes are jet sweeps, which count as a pass, you know, in college and everything like that. In essence, it's just a handoff. So I would like to know that statistical breakdown. I just think as a quarterback, either you could throw guys open and you need to put it on a dime where you can't.
I'd also like to know just how many passes were within 3 seconds. If he was 6 of 8, that's 75%.
Right.
But that doesn't count because it's 8 passes over an entire season.
Well, that's
so I need to know the actual sample size in addition to how many were actual throws. And I'm with you. To me, if you're coming from Wyoming, if you're coming from the MAC with 1A, if you're coming from the Mountain West or the Sun Belt, wherever it may be, I want you to have eviscerated people. You know, Mason Rudolph has 92 career touchdown passes. I want Josh Allen to have 92 in a season at Wyoming against that level of competition. I'm exaggerating, obviously.
No, I get it.
He doesn't have those numbers. And then you factor in when he's played bigger schools, better schools, he's struggled. I get it. He's huge. He's got a big arm. He looks the part. I just wish some of the on-field numbers were better than they are.
It's like the old, when you watch the Joe Namath documentary on HBO a number of years ago that came out, which was absolutely fantastic. And you listen to guys when they watched Namath at college at Alabama, right? And Paul Bear Bryant, and they'd say this, Namath tilted the field, right? Where you could see he was a pro, you could see his impact on the game, and you could see how talented he was with the style and fashion in which he was able to play and how he's able to dominate competition. I don't know if I see that with Josh Allen. Doesn't mean that he can't be a good NFL quarterback and he can't develop into that kind of quarterback in the next level, but I think there's enough of a concern to say, would you actually draft him number one overall? But sometimes people fall in love, and John Dorsey is clearly a guy that believes in looking at the hand size, the athleticism, and the arm strength and saying there are certain other things that you can teach when you're developing a quarterback in the transition from college to the National Football League. AB, take it away with an update, brother.
Your update's brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. A 16-point lead was down to 3, 87-84. The Celtics finally then got away from the Bucks in Game 5 in Boston.
6 on the shot clock. Horford against Giannis. The money matchup finds the cutter. Jaylen Brown pump fakes and scores off the glass. And the Celtics inch closer. Timeout, Joe Prunty.
Sean Grandy, Celtics Radio. 14 points from Brown, 16 from Terry Rozier, 22 from Al Horford in a 92-87 victory. So the Celtics take a 3-2 lead back to Milwaukee for Game 6 tomorrow night. The Warriors done with the Spurs, a 99-91 final in their Game 5 in Oakland. Draymond Green, 17 points, 19 rebounds, and 7 assists. Game 1 with the Pelicans on Saturday. The Sixers will play either those Celtics or Bucks at some point in the near future. They knocked off the Heat last night, 104-91 in their Game 5 in Philly. The simple breakdown from Dwayne Wade.
You can lose with effort. You know, you can lose to a better team. And that's what they were. And that's what they are.
Wade then said it was way too early to talk about his playing future. Game 5 tonight for the Raptors and Wizards, Cavs and Pacers, Rockets and T-Wolves, and Jazz and Thunder. Houston and Utah lead 3-1. The 2 East series are 2-2. Condoleezza Rice's commission on college basketball just released its suggestions to improve the sport. The panel wants the NBA and Players Association to again allow high schoolers to enter the draft directly. It makes no recommendation, though, on paying players until actual courtrooms make decisions on the matter. Guess who was back at practice yesterday? It was Andrew Luck, but the Colts QB still not throwing.
The Duke.
Only snaps and handoffs as Indy began a minicamp. The Marlins ended their 5-game losing streak, 3-2 at Dodger Stadium. The Giants got by the Nats, 4-3. Colorado blanked San Diego 8-0, and the Mets got a 6-5 win in 10 in St. Louis. The Angels, their second straight victory in Houston, 8-7. The Yankees dropped the Twins 8-3, and Oakland 1 in Texas, 3-2. The A's have taken 8 of 9, and it's Game 7 on ice tonight. The Bruins hosting the Leafs. The winner gets the Lightning starting Saturday.
Mark? Time right now to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day. And thank you, Andrew. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Henry in Baltimore. Do you have any confidence in OKC tonight to save their season? My answer, no. A.B.?
Yes, I think history tells you that game five like this, your home team usually wins it to extend, but then they'll lose game six back in Utah.
Mikey B.
I think the Thunder pull it out today.
Okay, Connor.
I do think the Thunder do win tonight.
Wow, I'm alone on that island.
Too much pride with Westbrook. He'll figure it out.
Yeah, he'll figure. What about the rest of the team? What about the old man and Carmelo Anthony? You can barely run up and down the court and can't guard anybody defensively.
25 tonight for Melo.
25. Well, and Mikey B, and we got to get Mikey B's predictions here because he is great with the NBA. Basically, so it is said, so it is done. But there you go. 3/4 of the crew this morning think OKC can save their season tonight at home, down 3-1 in the Utah Jazz. Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. Quadruple header tonight, NBA playoffs. Longtime NBA vet Tracy Murray joins Andrew and myself next as Taz and the Moose roll right along on a big Wednesday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Ah, yes, huge Wednesday night in the NBA. Taz and the Moose with you. Taz off here on this Wednesday morning. Andrew Bogus stepping in. Mark Malusis with you. And you've got a quadruple header beginning at 7, first tip, 9:30, the last tip. Let's talk all about it with Tracy Murray, former UCLA star, 12-year NBA veteran as well. Hey, Tracy, Mark and Andrew with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Good morning, guys.
How you doing, all right?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for joining us, Tracy. And Andrew and I discussed this earlier on the show. I want to get your take. You know, and you know, we might have seen the end of Wade last night in Miami and in the NBA, maybe. Maybe the end of Manu Ginobili with San Antonio. But LeBron is no longer 22 years of age. But I'll tell you, Tracy, you look across the NBA landscape, Adam Silver's got to be smiling ear to ear because there are young stars and great players abound in this league.
Oh, yeah, especially with this rookie class. I mean, Ben Simmons and Donovan, he's playing extremely well. And then you have young guys like Embiid, who he's a character, but he backs up everything that he says on the court. And that young Philly team, there's something special going on over there.
Yeah, Tracy, they're young, but they seem to almost play like veterans. I mean, put that game away last night when necessary. Two road wins in Miami. They have different ways to beat you. They know how to use them. They've got a great head coach. It's like they've done this before.
Well, you got to consider the balance and give them a little bit of credit as well of veterans that you know, that were journeymen. They're kind of moving around a little bit and end up right there in Philly. They have the nice mixture of veterans to go along with those young guys to lead them in the right direction, plus coaching and the skills development people on the coaching staff. They've done an excellent job of developing these kids and coaching them and getting them all on the same page. Getting them on the same page is a tough thing when you talk about young teams because everybody wants to establish themselves individually. Now, if you can get them to establish themselves collectively and still be effective individually, now you got something going.
Yeah, and that's true. And you know, last night, J.J. Redick with 27 points, he signs a one-year deal in the offseason. You know, you mentioned that veteran presence. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean, Redick was the right guy that was brought in to help this young core group of guys kind of develop and come together this year.
Well, Redick, Amir Johnson, Ilyasova, Bellinelli. I mean, you got some guys there that's been through the wars and had some playoff experience. And Redick may not have the playoff experience that some of the other guys have, but he's been through the wars and he's been in there with the Clippers in the playoffs and playing on that team and being in the Western Conference. So he has experience. And so when you have all of these guys to go along with the talented Ben Simmons and the Embiids and, you know, and those guys, Markel Fultz is now getting back into the fold. When you have that, you have a nice mixture.
We're talking to Tracy Murray, a 12-year NBA veteran. All right, Tracy, let's get into the quadruple header tonight. Let's start here, Toronto, right? Toronto home Wizards, they've lost two straight, number one seed in the Eastern Conference. They had won the first two games. I know both, you know, all the games have been won by the home team in this series. Ask it this way, how much pressure is on the shoulders of those Raptors players going into their matchup against Washington tonight?
Tons of pressure because, you know, when you don't get past the first round and now you're the number one seed, yeah, it's tons of pressure. They worked their tails off the last couple of years to get the number one and number two seed, but if you don't do anything with it, then, yes, it's pressure on you the next year if you do the same thing or play better than last year. So, I mean, they won all their home games. I expect them to win tonight as well. That's why they work so hard to get home court. But at some point, you got to have some mental toughness to get something on the road.
Who's to blame for that, Tracy? Is that the coach? Is that DeRozan and Lowry? When you see a team that maybe lacks that toughness, where do you think it usually comes from?
Well, it comes from the players. I mean, you have to your leadership in the locker room. That's where it comes from because stars win games on the road. The role players play well at home, and so it's up to the stars. And you see DeRozan, he stepped his level up. He's playing, but Lowry's got to join him. Lowry's been having nice games, you know, 19 points, close to double digit assists, and some nice rebounds. But it's got to be more than 19. He's got to be a star. He's got to step up. It's got to be 25 plus. For them to win on the road.
Yeah, and that's fair. And for a Washington team, Beal and Wall, you don't have to look that far to believe that maybe Washington can take two of the next three and advance to the second round as long as those two young dynamic guards continue to play at the level they are.
Right, but Beal hasn't played well on the road either. He didn't play well the first two games in Toronto. So will he step it up for this game? Whoever wins game five is going to win the series.
Let's move on to Cleveland. The Cavaliers entertaining the Indiana Pacers. Pacers have given the Cavs everything that they can handle. Indiana led this series at one point in time, 2-1. Cleveland won game four to get it back to Cleveland. What would make you believe, Tracy, watching this series, that maybe Indiana is the team to knock off the King and knock off James and stop that consecutive NBA Finals run?
Well, the first road win that they won in Cleveland makes me believe that there can possibly be an upset because they've already won one on the road. But then you flip it on the other side and you see the Cavs and their experience with King James. He's not going to allow it to happen too easily. And I think that's where Cleveland lacks. Is there a playoff experience with the new guys that came over in the trade? Because most of those guys are young. The only one that has playoff experience in that trade is George Hill. The rest of those kids haven't had playoff experience. So that's what they're lacking with those guys that came over.
Tracy, it's amazing to me through all of the changes, the trades, the signings, you know, the Cavs, we still are having the same conversation. Like, who's going to be the number two guy behind LeBron? You know, the secondary guys weren't good enough. Kevin Love had only 5 points in the last game. Hill is hurt. No matter what they've done this year, they've remained in this same position. We're wondering if, you know, roster spots 2 through 12 are good enough to get them by anybody right now.
Well, I mean, there's been a debate on if this is the least talented team that LeBron has to carry to the finals. And I have to, I wouldn't say least talented, I would say least experienced. What's going on with J.R. Smith on a consistent basis? He's not very consistent with what he's bringing offensively. What's going on? I know Kevin Love has been injured. He hasn't found a rhythm. He re-injured his hand on the last couple games ago. Tristan Thompson's not getting off the bench. I mean, these are guys that helped win a championship. Where are these guys? How come they haven't stepped up?
Do you think they're going to step up enough for Cleveland to advance to the next round in this series, Tracy?
They need to, and Uncle Jeff Green's got experience too. He needs to step up too. those guys are very important to the Cleveland success. If the young guys are going to be inconsistent. They're going to contribute from time to time, like Clarkson did the other day. But those guys who won the championship, they have to be consistently good. Kyle Korver is experienced. He's going to have to be consistently good. These guys are the guys that's supposed to be LeBron's help, and they're not there on a consistent basis.
How about the Houston Rockets, Tracy? They're entertaining the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. They lead the series 3-1. They're a hefty 12-point favorite going into tonight. You look at Houston, first three games of this series did not shoot the ball particularly well, right? Minnesota was doing a wonderful job rotating guys defensively to James Harden. I'll ask it this way. If you're a Houston supporter, are you going to look back at that third quarter, game four, up by one going into half, where they dropped 50 on Minnesota? Is that the quarter that this Rocket team finally found themselves?
It can happen. I think so, because it can happen at any time. As many threes as those guys shoot, and multiple people shoot them. And then you have the penetration of Paul and Hart. You have to guard those guys when they get by you and get into the paint, because they can score that basketball. So when the help is there and you're surrounded by shooters, I mean, that's tough. It's really hard to guard. And you can, with as many shooters as they have, they can catch fire on a 40 to 50 point quarter at any time, especially at home. Now they're at home. So, and that happened on the road the other day. Now, could you imagine at home and you have the home fans and everybody? It can happen at any time.
Tracy, break a tie for us. I think the Thunder at least salvage game five tonight before bowing out in game six. Mark thinks it might end tonight. What do you got for this one?
Oh, this was tough. You know, those guys have pride, but I don't know if they have enough leg to keep up with Utah. You know, Gobert is protecting the hole very well, and Rubio's played consistently well. And I'll tell you, Donovan Mitchell is just a superstar. It's going to be a tough task, but I think Russell Westbrook is going to defend home one more time before going back to Utah and losing the series.
You know what, Tracy? I would have a tendency to agree, right? Backs up against the wall, home team, but you hit upon it. You watch this Utah team, younger, fresher, livelier. You could see it. You don't have to be in the arena to watch it. They just look like the better basketball team.
They are the better basketball team. I think, you know, if you look at career-wise, you know, OKC's guys have the better career, the big threes. But, I mean, you got guys like Ingles and Exum and all of these guys. Everybody's playing their role to Utah. Everybody's playing their role. It seems like their legs are a lot lighter at this period of the playoffs.
No, you're right about that. And to the victor go the spoils. The Jazz might lose tonight, but I think we're all in agreement they're eventually going to march on to the next round. Hey, Tracy, we appreciate it. Thanks for getting us up early this morning and talk a little NBA. We always appreciate it, bud.
No problem. Thanks for having me on again.
You got it. Thanks, Tracy Murray. Tracy Murray, 12-year NBA veteran, former UCLA star. And listen, OKC might win tonight, Andrew, but Utah's winning that series.
Yeah, that's it. Tonight's their swan song. If they get this, it's good for them, but then they ain't winning game six.
This is the line in the sand. Because he's been so good, we'll run through him quickly here for Biseglia. Winners only. Wizards, Raptors, who wins?
Toronto.
Pacers, Cavs, who wins?
Cleveland.
Timberwolves, Rockets, who wins?
Rockets.
OKC, Jazz.
OKC, Melo with 25+.
25+.
On 29 shots.
There you go.
Didn't say how many shots he needed to take.
25+ for Carmelo Anthony.
Always efficient.
Our thanks to Connor Green, Mikey B across the way. Andrew, I enjoyed the last 3 hours, buddy.
This was fun. I didn't miss Pete at all.
Bilotti's out there preparing for the next show and for Taz's return tomorrow. Remember, download the podcast each and every day. iTunesRadio.com. Tune in. Give us a rating. Enjoy your Wednesday, everybody. We out.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.